The first law of river engineering is that complex river engineering problems often have simple, easy to understand, but wrong answers.
That was David Biedenharn, Corps of Engineers river mechanics expert and our first guest when we push out the inaugural episode of the Regional Sediment Management River Mechanics Podcast. And with his first law of river engineering, David gets at something that most of us who have spent decades working with rivers have come to understand. The river process disciplines. Topics like sediment transport, fluvial geomorphology, and river mechanics. These aren't design manual skills. These are softer, wisdom-based skills. These skills are not primarily equations you can code up in MATLAB or straightforward textbook charts that apply across most settings. River process decisions are often site-specific and require scientific muscle memory that only really develops through mentored repetition. These fields require years of mentored intuition-building reps, which is why much of what I think I know about how rivers and sediment processes work didn't actually come from classes, papers, or conferences, but from informal conversations with mentors. And that is the motivation for this podcast, because our discipline is staring down the barrel of a massive demographic challenge, particularly in our federal science-based agencies. My agency and others are going through a demographic transition where most of the subject matter experts, including most of my mentors, have retired or are about to. And expertise in these fields, it takes a lifetime to build and a retirement party to lose. And sediment and river processes matter. Sediment transport and river engineering decisions have high stakes, intergenerational consequences. As John Remus said in one of our episodes,
man-made infrastructure will wear out and the capacity will be exceeded. That's a fact of life. So we need to make wise decisions now so that we don't bootstrap future generations to the point where they can't make a good decision.
I'm Stanford Gibson, the sediment transport specialist at the Corps' Hydrologic Engineering Center and one of our agency's national subject matter specialists. But as I see the men and women who have mentored me retiring, leaving my cohort as the agency experts, I can't help feeling like we need to do everything we can to maintain some continuity of insight. And I wanted to try to mitigate some of that institutional wisdom loss, to record some of this multi-decadal insight that we're about to lose, and to pass it along. But not as papers or technical reports that'll sit on a shelf or server, but in the form in which it influenced me over the years, informal conversations with thoughtful mentors. And I think it's the insight density and tech transfer efficiency of informal conversations with subject matter experts that's part of the reason for the big podcast boom over the last 3 to 5 years. And I'm all in. I love podcasts. Most mornings when I push in my earbuds during my pre-work run, I queue up some conversation or interview with someone in some other field, economics, philosophy, statistics, or if I'm going to be honest, sometimes just fancy football. But I always wish I could queue up a conversation with the subject matter experts in my fields, sediment transport, river mechanics, fluvial geomorphology. And I just kind of got tired of waiting for someone else to do it. And so with support from the Corps' Regional Sediment Management Program, we've recorded a 9-episode season. Plus or minus, we might have a few bonus episodes in there. And almost all these conversations are recorded and in production, so we can give you a little preview of what's coming. In addition to David Biedenharn and John Remus, I talked to Molly Wood, the USGS sediment data lead.
Sediment isn't always on everybody's radar. You know, people don't think of sediment as like, oh, well, sediment's the big enemy, but it drives so many things. You know, it attaches to things. It transports other things. It's so much more complex in the way it moves.
We recorded an episode with Dr. Joanna Crow Curran about the Wilcock and Crow equation, as well as a wide range of other topics.
When there's a very low sand content, it's mostly trapped under things. It's right behind the big gravels. The sand moves when the gravel moves. And as you start to go from a very low sand content, like say 5-6%, up towards maybe 10-15%, maybe even higher, but you start adjusting so that you have more sand on the surface, so it's moving a little bit more independently of those big gravels. First, it only moves with the gravel. And so the sand really has the same incipient shear stress as the gravel. As it gets to be more, it's starting to move at its own shear stress. And then as you get enough sand, you've almost really transformed the surface or the active layer into more like a matrix. And the gravel now is moving at the shear stress of the sand.
Dr. Ron Copeland talked with us about the early days of river restoration, analytical channel design, modeling, and long-term Mississippi morphology trends.
I think one of the biggest issues with a lot of the early restoration work is that they weren't designed on this concept of we have to move the sediment that's coming in through the Project Reed to the downstream end. It's a simple concept. What goes in must come out or you have a problem.
We talked to Katie Boucher, the lead of the Corps' Regional Sediment Management R&D program, about the bigger picture of agency sediment management and what's unique about the RSM approach.
Before RSM or regional sediment management, we were really looking at sediment as a nuisance. So sediment was something that was stuck in our channels that we just needed to get rid of to maintain navigation. But as we started to think about our systems in a more broad sense, we realized, well, that sediment really has a lot of value. Taking sediment out of the channel and disposing of it offshore or upland leads to a net loss to our sediment budgets. And so that can lead to erosion downdrift.
And finally, just a couple weeks ago, I got a chance to head up to the Cascade Volcanic Observatory to talk to Dr. Richard Iverson, whose work on debris flow mechanics have really set the standard for how I and others think about these processes. And debris flows are remarkable. We talked about the physics involved in these processes, the experiments at the giant debris flow flume that they have up there, some of the biggest geological hazards in recent history, including the mind-blowing scale of the volcano-associated geophysical flows called lahars.
And so the world's largest lahars, the ones that we know about, not so much from historical times, but from the geologic record, you know, were several cubic kilometers in volume, you know, so several billion cubic meters. To put that in context, the largest debris flows I'm aware of, at least in historic times, of non-volcanic origins are more on the order of perhaps 100 or 200 million cubic meters. And so we're talking about orders of magnitude difference in maximum size. The speeds can be astounding in those kinds of localities. For example, with this event that occurred at Mount Meager in 2010, what the seismic data interpretations indicate is speeds up to about 200 miles an hour.
We also talked to Chris Nygaard about dam removal modeling and a bunch of other things, and we're chasing a couple other episodes. So subscribe and check back here every couple weeks for conversations about river processes, sediment transport, and fluvial geomorphology. And welcome to the RSM River Mechanics Podcast.